Next on BYUSN, head coach Kevin Young and BYU Men's Hoops add their second commitment from the transfer portal yesterday. Who he is and what does he bring to Provo, we discuss. And what is the blueprint for Cougar Hoops to build that championship roster? Will next year's team look more like year one or year two under Coach Young?
Fox Sports Radio host Aaron Torres joins the show to discuss BYU's activity in the portal and discuss the latest on Rob Ride III. And starting right tackle Andrew Gentry details how the offensive line has gelled together this spring with a nice mix of returners and newcomers.
Welcome to BYU Sports Nation, presented by the BYU Store, official outfitter of BYU fans everywhere. Happy Tuesday, April 14th. I am Spencer Linton, alongside a man who is always looking for that next BYU TV hit, Jerem Jordan.
Now, back in the day on KBYU, Little House on the Prairie was a big deal. Merlin Olsen, great Utah State Aggie, part of the fearsome foursome with the Rams.
Doubt.
He was on that show. Yesterday I saw a trailer for a Netflix reboot of Little House on the Prairie.
Because why not?
What? What in the Merlin Olsen? So my question for you is, if you could reboot any KBYU or BYU TV property, what would you reboot?
I want Anne of Green Gables back, Jerem.
What? What was the show that replaced our 4 p.m. rebroadcast?
Lark Rise to Candle.
Lark Rise to Candleford. Yeah.
Yeah, what I really want is the reboot of the 4 p.m. BYU Sports Nation.
I would like a reboot of this show back when it was good.
I have no idea how to
just
respond
kidding.
To that.
Just but. Kidding. Our production team's awesome. The hosts, yeah.
They put up with us. We'll leave it at that.
My real answer, I don't know.
I have no idea.
I don't know.
Maybe like...
True Blue!
The Friday night, like... Do you remember
on
Friday...
Oh, the rebroadcast?
Yes, the Friday night, like, classic games.
Yeah!
That's probably what I would bring back. Because, like...
It's all on demand, though, now. You just go watch it.
On a Friday night. But there's something about linear. Like, watching the 83 Holiday Bowl on Friday night. Like, yeah, I'll watch
it. What if it was, like, me, you, and Blaine just throwing down some popcorn, watching old games? He's telling us the real stories behind that. You're telling stuff from the sideline. That's a show idea.
And we're making commentary about said game.
But I did read the Little House on the Prairie books as a kid.
You did?
That's the kind of LDS house I grew up in.
And that's why Jerem is excited. Shout out to Merlin Olsen and Hans Olsen.
I don't think I listened to FM radio until I was a senior in high school. I watched the Super Bowl at midnight. That's how it was growing up a little bit. A little different now.
Just a little bit. And different age for college sports in general, as we're all finding out together, which is at the center of what's trending. So rise and shout. Let's get to it. Indications are that BYU is doing some nice work in the portal. 40%+ shooter from the three-point line.
They hope that he can be a 3-and-D guy. Excited about who it'll be. We'll be stoked. I'll put our arms around him fully, embrace him, break down what they did last year. Stoked. We're showing dap-ups with you and Kevin Young.
Apparently.
Let's go.
Apparently, he's excited about Little House on the Prairie as well.
Must be the offseason.
If one 40%+ three-point shooter is good, more are better, Jerem. More are better. Yesterday, Kevin Young and BYU basketball picking up their second commitment from the transfer portal. He is not officially signed yet. So once again, disclaimer for this program on BYU Sports Nation. We can't say his name. You all know the drill, but we can absolutely talk about what type of player he is, the specific skill set he brings to BYU, and why just maybe he's the perfect fit for Provo, Utah.
Some people are saying heaven to Betsy. That's what they're saying. Modern stretch four. Out of Syracuse, probably the starter there. What does he do well? I see two things. One, threes. And two, I like his switchability on defense.
Yes,
so let's talk about it.
His defense, he gets after it.
Let's talk about it. Yes and no. Let's talk about it. Number one, the basketball app, which I discovered this morning. Thank you, Chris Collinsworth, for tweeting about it. Fantastic. It calls him a shooter in a forward's body. So 6'8", long, 40.7% from distance. So the Kentucky kid and the... Syracuse shooter, as we go alliteration. Mm-hmm. These two dudes are what Kevin Young talked about after the Texas game. Shooters are the holy grail. He wants shooters. So you always added two shooters. So this guy took 123 threes last season, only 46 twos. 71% of his shots are from distance. He went from 26 to 50 makes, 40% plus in five of the six zones on the perimeter. Jumped 8.6% from three last year. So that's shooting. Number two, defensive potential. I was told, go watch the Houston game. He guarded Kingston Flemings, Milo Suzan, Chris Sinek. He can switch one through four or five, which is great. He did have a negative Bayesian performance rating, or BPR, from Evan Maia individually on defense. So, but they like the potential to improve on that side. So number three, there's some stuff to work on, just 24% from mid-range, although mid-range isn't super shot that BYU takes a lot, right? Layups or threes. And then 2.8 rebounds per game and 18 minutes per game, below average for a 6'8 dude, so perhaps he can rebound a little bit better. But I really like the shooting component for this incoming guy. I'm excited about it. And I would pencil him in at the four right now to start.
Some words that were used to explain him to me by those that know the situation and have been monitoring this portal scenario for BYU and bringing him in are very coachable. And the phrase was, willing to get after it on defense, which BYU clearly values after what happened last season. Just the willingness to go and play defense, and you couple that with some good coaching, okay. Yep. Clearly, great three-point shooter. I feel like BYU is going back to the 2024 team. We'll get into this at length in just a moment, but the shooters are showing up. BYU had three guys that shot 40% or better from the three-point line in 2024. They have already brought in two guys that now fit that mold.
And Power League guys. Like, they've been playing against good competition in doing this. These are not mid-majors coming to the Big 12, and hopefully they happen. This is Syracuse and Kentucky we're talking about. I also want to mention the idea that, BYU is going to have a new-look starting lineup. Like, it's going to be four or five guys. If Rob Wright III comes back, it's four. If he doesn't, it's five new starters.
Brand new starting five.
And also, I've talked about this over the years, we hope for the Alex Barcelo principle of you were at a different program that was good, but the fit wasn't right at the moment for what your skill set was and your development and so on, that this guy comes in, because he was at Cincinnati 2 years ago, Syracuse last year, is that this system, this situation works.
Yeah.
And sometimes it takes a couple years. We've talked about it. In football, I don't really judge anybody till they're a junior. It just takes time to, one, get in the lineup, to do anything, like the full capacity of who you are. And so it's incoming two juniors that are 40% plus shooters.
The ascension at BYU.
I like the idea of that, and hopefully, obviously, 2 years. You know, it's cool to get one guy for 1 year. We'll take the seniors. We'll take the A.J. DeMontis of the world, 1,000,000%. Come on. But I love the idea of potentially a couple years together would be great.
You mentioned he was at Cincinnati. In fact, BYU played against him in 2024 in Kevin Young's first year. He had 2 points. In BYU's win in Provo. So it wasn't a huge factor in the game, but BYU did play against him.
Did BYU lose that game?
He was at Cincinnati. I think that's the one game that they beat.
Oh, that's the one they won. Not the Mark Pope first Big 12 home game BYU lost. Gotcha.
No.
Gotcha.
No.
Okay.
But
honestly, this player is going to have more than 2 points.
Overall,
in the Marriott Center, which is great.
Safe to say, we feel very encouraged about the length, the shooting, coachability, and the willingness to want to defend.
Yeah. Give me a 6'8 shooter. I'm not going to say no. Let's go. Okay, Michigan won the Natty last year with five transfers in his starting five, becoming the first team to ever do that. Four were totally new.
Is BYU going to be that team?
As BYU enters year three, probably, like we're talking about, we hope it's four if Rob comes back. What's BYU's blueprint to build? And it says a championship roster. Like, championship roster to me is too much. What I want is
Sweet 16 roster?
Top 6 team in the Big 12, and that could go to the Sweet 16 like 2 years ago. But, so are we going to go championship or not? Because championship to me is ambitious. Of what, the Big 12? Is that what we're talking about? That's a lot. I don't expect that. Like, I just want BYU to be in the top 6. That's what I want.
I think the idea is for BYU to have a team that could compete at the top of the Big 12, right? Like, be in the conversation for a Big 12 championship? Or are we talking about straight
to
up
me, that's,
win it?
That's great. Realistically, I just want to be like a top 4 seed in the NCAA tournament. Okay. I want to be a top 6 team in the Big 12.
Okay.
But, hey, reach. Here's the thing. The rev share, we've talked about the rev, but not the share, was not fully enacted last year. And so BYU and others were uncapped. Now they're capped in a different way. There's not quite the same opportunity to spend as much because the 20.5 is just official and distributed. And some schools don't think that you can actually enact that, and so they're spending more. BYU's not going to be one of them. They're within that 20 and a half. So it's hard to build a championship roster if you have a great football team like BYU expects to have.
It takes a special mixture of elements,
right,
especially at Brigham Young University, to find guys that are truly bought into what BYU stands for, the transformational experience on top of, like, your ability to come and play good basketball and be coached by the top assistant in the NBA 2 years ago and Kevin Young and be part of Provo and NBA boot camp. Like, BYU has a lot to offer,
yes,
which is fantastic, which is why these guys from Kentucky and Syracuse are willing to play ball
and
at BYU.
And if you purely want dough, this isn't the place for you.
No, and I think that that idea was permeating last year specifically.
Oh, AJ, they paid him seven. No,
BYU's just all about the money.
He said it wasn't that much.
No, and it's not.
There were others with higher offers.
How to build a championship caliber roster. You define championship caliber however you would like it. Maybe how to get back to what BYU did in 2024 and go to a Sweet 16 or be in contention.
Isn't that the actual realistic
battle for the Elite Eight for only the second time in program history?
Isn't that the actual realistic model? To be at the top of the Big 12? Like, why is Arizona's football team was good last year, but their men's basketball team is the premier team on campus. Men's hoops is number two to football.
Who finished fourth in the Big 12 this year? Wasn't it Iowa State?
You have to be that good. By the way, Milan Momcilovic.
In the portal.
He's not returning. They're like, we've got to move on. It's like, whoa, what? That guy's going to be expensive if he returns,
by the way. Good luck with the salary cap or the rev share cap in place.
Yeah. There's a cap.
Locking in Milan Momcilovic.
Okay, so year 3 under Kevin Young. Let's sort of assess what the first year was.
It was balance, Jerem. It was balance and depth and...
Can you have balance in rev share now?
Core BYU players with a superstar in Yegor Adioma sprinkled in, but then like those critical key, critical bench players, Mawit Mag.
Became a starter.
Became a very important piece for BYU and then eventually got into the starting lineup. But
corner threes, baby.
Talking the garnish, okay? Like the core, the steak is there, but like if you want a steak to taste great, you need the right spices and herbs and garnish and like the ability to cook it the right way.
The garnish is a big, fat question mark for BYU because what is going to come off the bench for BYU? Brooks Barr, Dean Rickard, Nate Pickens, Brody Kozlowski, Hadeem Boop. Like what will the... Hadeem Boop, we've kind of seen the trajectory. We haven't really seen the others, right, in college. So looking back, this is an interesting stat from our producer, Colton Potter. Average 5-plus points and 15-plus minutes a game. You had nine dudes.
Nine guys.
Nine 2 years ago.
Seven of the guys on that roster shot 35% or better from three.
Okay, and then you go to last year, and there were five. Devonta, Wright, Saunders, Davis, Cato. Essentially, your starters. Dawson Baker did, but he only played in six games, right?
Ugh.
So it's got to be some blend of that.
At least eight deep, yeah?
Baker doesn't have an AJ. There's no AJ, right? But do they have a Rob Ryan and a Richie Saunders types, like guys that are in the 15 to 20 points a game range that can compete at a high level in the big? Yes, absolutely. I think the Kentucky kid, I think the Burger Boy, I think those are your top two. And then TBD point guard, if it's Rob Ryan, it comes back. If not, maybe he goes to Kentucky. You have to replace that position. Center, you're going to have a guy that's probably going to come in with an opportunity here. BYU recruiting heavily guys that have great potential that you've seen online, right? Notably, perhaps from UConn and Colorado and others. We'll see. And then the bench is TBD. With the rev share and the cap, it's just a different model. Kevin Young told me last year, what we did in year one with that bench was extraordinary. He said, I don't think I've been on a team that was that deep. We had that much quality. You had starting guys coming off the bench like Dallin Hall
and Foose. BYU had a second starting five almost in its entirety.
Yes. They could have taken second or third in the West Coast Conference. that group, right?
Second five.
From our previous era there, right? In the Big 12, maybe not. But it was an extraordinary group. Trevin Nell and so on and so forth. This is going to be a little different. BYU is going to need unproven guys to be good bench players. And everyone's got to show up. I don't think BYU is going to have a roster of 15 dudes, by the way. There's just not enough money for the group. Do you want to be great in football and men's basketball and all the other sports? You only have so much money to shell out. And obviously you go hard football, hard men's basketball, and then you try and be as competitive as you can
in the other sports. But, Jerem, who's governing the rev share? It's the Wild West. People... Do you not realize at this point that BYU will follow the rules? They will play ball with the cap in place.
And if
they're not going to try and skirt rules.
And if you're a person that doesn't want to, there's 360 other D1s. They're probably a good fit for you. So let's see what happens here. Nice headline, by the way, the best 2 years. That was a fun movie. 2 years ago was a Sweet 16 team that had a blend of balance. Can BYU go 10 deep? Probably not, let's be honest. It's like
eight, though. Eight. I'm saying eight.
Yeah, for sure. You realistically get to seven, eight guys, probably. Your starters need to stay healthy. Like last year, you got to stay healthy. The whole thing, of course. So I'm interested to see what that looks like. Championship? I'm not really thinking that. Give me top six in the Big 12. Give me top four seed in the NCAA tournament. Realistically, let's say top five seed. That means BYU will get a six because that's what BYU does every year, it feels like now.
Okay, so if we are simplifying the answer to this conversation based on everything that we just discussed, eight deep feels pretty safe, right? A bench of at least three contributors.
You're trying to find three contributors on the bench, yep.
And in that eight that play, you have to have what I refer to as true blue BYU guys, like core BYU guys. You have to have a handful of those guys in there, and it feels like the roster this year is moving in that direction.
Yeah.
With the implementation of unnamed player from Kentucky, who is a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
He'll be the face of that group.
Dawson Baker, Brody Kozlowski. Like, there are...
Dean Rickert. Hey, Dean Rickert, a return missionary, Brooks
Barr. Brooks off of a mission.
Yeah.
So you core true blue BYU guys.
We got to give Brooks a minute.
And then the right sprinkling of elite talent from the portal.
Absolutely.
Guys that are bought into BYU. Because that roster, what we just showed you, of the guys that were 5-plus points per game, 15 minutes a game, there's not a name. Maybe outside of cannon catchings, there's not a name on that list that I'm like, okay, they were all in on BYU. Every single one of those guys, all in on BYU. They wanted to be here because of BYU.
Mm, yeah.
It makes a difference.
Yeah. And BYU could be Kevin Young because of Kevin Young.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if Burger Boy, you know, he's here because professional development under this staff.
NBA boot camp.
He loves it. Great, you know. I feel like I sealed the deal when he came on the tour.
Yeah, but
I gave him the tour of the building. I feel like I sealed it, Spence. I really do.
Here's the thing, though. The two major stars, Yegor Dilman and A.J. DeBonta, have
embraced what this place is. Yes. I think.
So I call them true blue BYU guys now.
Yeah. I feel like it's not. What you're saying is not exactly church membership. It's church membership and or a guy that embraces this
place. Bought into what this university stands for.
I like that.
Play for the letters on the front of the jersey.
Yes.
Like, you know what it's about.
Yes.
Question of the day. With eight players now in the transfer portal, eight! Do you believe BYU basketball, when all is said and done this offseason, will have a net gain in the portal? Whew! At Mooser Himes says, given the shaky performance last season of those who entered the portal, I firmly believe we'll have a net positive performance in the portal. KY and company learned a lot about the portal and building a team last go-around in KY We Trust.
It feels like men's hoops is going more of the direction of what football has been, which is extremely targeted and intentional certain fits. Because they have a number of dudes coming back that want to prove themselves. So, yeah, in hoops, yeah, they aim pretty high in men's hoops. And nobody's been higher than A.J. DeBonta in the history of BYU athletics from a recruiting standpoint.
At Tater Coog says, I think that depends on retaining Rob Wright.
Ooh, yeah.
I don't think they can find a better primary ball handler, so retaining him probably puts them into the net positive. Like, if BYU loses Rob, is it going to be a net loss regardless of what they pick up in the portal?
I'd like to see who they pick up before we answer this question. But
makes it a fun conversation.
Obviously, the hope is yes.
Yeah. Weigh in on X, Facebook, and Instagram. Let's get into the hurry-up drill. Pick up the tempo. Jerem, start us off.
ESPN's Mark Schlabaugh put out his post-spring way too early top 25. BYU at number 12. Do you think BYU would be higher or lower than that in the AP preseason poll?
Man, give me the blue goggles, Jerem. I would love for BYU to show up in a better ranking than number 12.
Better?
But it's not happening. I expect BYU probably to show up somewhere between 13 and 15.
Yeah, I'm in same. Yeah, that'd be sweet. It makes sense in a lot of ways to be in that range. I don't
see number 11.
No. We're in a playoff spot to start. No.
I don't expect that. ESPN NFL draft expert Jordan Reed published his top 500 player big board this morning. It features seven BYU players. Notably, Jack Kelly is the highest at number 202. Chase Roberts, number 300. Carson Ryan, 338. Isaiah Jada, 400. Then Will Farron, Garrison Grimes and Maury Bamba all falling between 400 and 500. What does this tell you about how many BYU players could or should be drafted in next week's NFL draft?
Mr. Irrelevance, number 257. So right now that'd be one projected guy. That's not exactly how it works, but I think the line for BYU drafted players is 1.5. Yeah. Jack Kelly, and then will there be a second?
Carson Ryan, I think, has now started to ascend into maybe a seventh round pick position. I got a lot of people like Carson.
I'm not sure that seventh round matters that much. Like undrafted free agent, a little more ability to pick your own fit. So it's nice to say we had X picks or whatever.
Didn't BYU have three drafted in the seventh round in 2021?
Yes.
After the COVID season?
Yes.
And they were all late. It was Dax Milne.
Kyrus and Chris.
And Chris Wilcox.
Yeah. BYU softball playing in, an hour and 10 minutes against the Utah Tech Trailblazers on ESPN Plus coming up.
Trying to win their fourth straight, Jerem.
Come on, baby.
Keep it rolling like baseball's been doing. Mm-hmm. Up next, Aaron Torres is back on the program, leaving his perch of Fox Sports to hang out with us on BYU Sports Nation. Jerem goes one-on-one with him to discuss the portal pickups and the latest on the Rob Wright situation. Stay with us. I think they're looking for a mix of year one and year two.
Kevin Young has a clear plan of what he wants, what he needs, what his expectations are.
I'm still feeling that BYU is going to have a top 25-ish roster and NBA talent and will compete for a top 6-5 for the tournament.
We're live in Studio B. This is your day-to-day BYU Sports play-by-play. I am Spencer Linton alongside Jerem Jordan. We continue our ongoing conversation in portal season.
Yeah, April has given us content, right? The transfer portal has given us lots of stuff. Guys in, guys out. This morning I talked to Fox Sports' Aaron Torres about all of it. Aaron, great to have you back on the program. Let's talk about some of the news and notes with BYU Men's Hoops. Certainly 8 guys in the portal. Of note, Rob Wright, the biggest name among them. What do you think of what's going on with Rob relative to Kentucky and BYU and others?
Yeah, you know, you feel bad because this feels like one that feels like something is going to happen at any point. So, you know, by the end of the day, this all might be outdated. People listening on podcast, all of that. But listen, you know, my take is kind of what, and I certainly don't know how every BYU fan feels, but my understanding is exactly what has been reported by so many of your great reporters in Provo is just Rob is a guy who is a very talented college basketball player, but probably will not play in the NBA and certainly doesn't have like that obvious, you know, top 10, top 5, top 1 talent like AJ DeBonsa. And so this is really his window to, you know, make as much money as he can. And so look, we're all fans of somebody. I understand if you fell in love with Rob Wright, you hope to have him back. But I think it just is interesting that, you know, if there's a financial opportunity that he can't pass up, I think the people in the BYU basketball offices understand that. So it's a unique situation. It's a totally 2026 NIL situation. But I do think the one thing I will say, I'm already going long on my first answer, typical me. I do think we'll get some resolution pretty soon. I don't get the sense that the market is 20 different teams that want him. I think it's really specifically Kentucky where he's visiting as we speak and maybe one or two others. So I don't think this is something that goes into late May, something like that. I think BYU fans one way or another get a resolution as to whether he will be a Cougar next year or playing somewhere else.
BYU certainly needs a point guard. They also need a center. What's more important at this point for BYU in your opinion?
First of all, you know, I was talking to Eric Riba in the UConn locker room a few days ago. He seemed to be loving life in stores, my alma mater. Now all the buzz is a couple days later, he's in the portal and could end up at BYU. To answer your question specifically, Jerem, you know, I think to me, I still think it's the point guard spot. Now you could argue Big 12, the physicality, you need that low post presence. But I think as good as some of the commits and new players are going to be Bruce Branch, Colin Chandler, you need that engine that makes it go. So I will still say point guard with the understanding that the front court clearly needs to be addressed because you do in fact play. I don't know if you checked the schedule lately, but Arizona's still on the schedule next year. Houston's still on the schedule next year. Texas Tech is still on the schedule next year. Iowa State. So you need that physicality in the front court. But I also believe you need the engine that makes it all go.
Yeah, both are super important for sure. Good insight there. I didn't know you were a UConn guy. Shout out to AZ Fudd and everybody, like UConn Hoops. legit on both ends forever, man.
Basketball capital of the world.
Really
it's
is.
It's a trademark at this point. Yeah, it was funny. So UConn has tangentially called itself the basketball capital of the world. And then like two or three years ago when the men's team kind of reemerged, I think it's even officially, you know, it's on officially licensed gear and all that. But no, I did go to UConn. I'm not one of those, you know, fake fans that just hopped on the bandwagon. I grew up in Connecticut. I think that's really where my love of college basketball and college sports came from. Proud alum, do have the piece of paper, and, you know, another conversation for another day, but, you know, disappointing how the season ended, but I thought Dan Hurley got the most out of his team. And I forget who I was telling this to, but had very nice things to say about the experience against BYU in Boston. You know, he was talking about early in the Final Four week about, hey, you know, you guys gave up on us in February and March, but look at who we beat in November and December, specifically referencing, hey, we basically got BYU when they were essentially at full strength, and that was as good of a team as we saw all year. So Dan Hurley was very complimentary of BYU to bring it back to the BYU conversation.
I know he told some of the former BYU players that were there that talked to him. He said, hey, we'll see you in Indianapolis, thinking BYU had a good chance there. Didn't end up, but he is Aaron Torres of Fox Sports Radio, and he has that piece of paper, as he mentioned, from UConn. Okay, let's talk about the incoming commitments that BYU has, notably from Kentucky and Syracuse. What do you think of those ads?
So I think they're good ads. You know, first of all, again, to bring it full circle, Tyler Betsy from beautiful Windsor, Connecticut. My mom just bought a condo. You know, I don't know if I'm supposed to put this out publicly, but she just bought a condo in Windsor, Connecticut.
That's the breaking news.
Yeah, that is the breaking news. I don't know if we can get that on the ticker before the end of the segment. But no, you know, so I've known about this kid probably since he was a you know, sophomore in high school. You know, I'll tell you, like, a quick funny side story is there was a public discourse in Connecticut about why UConn wasn't more seriously recruiting him. And I don't have the answer. You know, I don't know exactly why. But he is a guy that has been well-known in those circles for a long time. And I think the reaction that I saw yesterday from most BYU fans, to me, is the correct one. And I'm not telling people how to feel or whatever, but I think you have a guy who played at a power conference school, high-level competition, excuse me, and you look at the stats, you know, he's not going to come in to be a 19-point-a-game scorer, and that's okay. Not everybody, that shouldn't be and isn't everybody's role. But he's proven he can do it at a high level. He's proven he can shoot at a high level. He's proven he can play a role at a high level. And again, I think it's about putting other talented pieces around him, which, as I mentioned and as you mentioned, Jerem, is that, you know, Bruce Branch is coming in. The transfer from Kentucky is coming in as well. And so to transition to him, you know, you guys are very familiar with Colin Chandler. Like I think he's one. He really, like, and it's funny, you know, you guys would know even better than I do, but I think people don't fully understand the Mormon mission and like you guys do and this audience does. But when Colin committed to Kentucky, telling people, I said, listen, I've certainly never, but as you're really away from basketball and you know, everything basically. And so I remember saying, don't miss freshman year because it's just going to be a readjustment to life here, major college basketball. But year two, I said, expect that big leap. And that's exactly what we saw, just under double figures. You know, having watched a lot of Kentucky, was probably miscast as a point guard early when they had injuries. But when he got into that off-ball role, he was very effective. And it's cliche, it's obvious, but it's exact. I think it's going to play out exactly the way everybody thinks, in that he is going to slide into that Richie Saunders off-ball role, playmaker role, and I think he's going to be really good in that role as well.
Yeah, that trajectory, similar numbers to sophomores, which is kind of interesting, similar look to them. So different games a little bit, but I'm excited to certainly see him play at BYU. Okay, you were one of the vocal people about ROI relative to A.J. DiBonsa, and there were some negative opinions, some positive opinions. How would you summarize the ROI that we have seen so far and that could still happen with A.J. DiBonsa's 1 year at BYU?
Well, I think the problem, Jerem, is a lot of people, and this is not a BYU thing, it's a college basketball thing, is they parachute into college basketball in March and then have these big, bold opinions. And so what I saw was a lot of, you know, AJ wasted his 1 year, or the BYU staff didn't surround him with the right team. And I don't know how many of those people understood that there were six season-ending injuries on that roster, including two, you know, an All-American and Richie, and then, of course, you know, really two or three players that played that were expected to play key roles. And so you see BYU losing the opener against Texas, and you sit there and say, well, you know, I mean, you could have gone somewhere else and had better talent around them. And, like, that's not disrespect to the guys that were on the floor. It's just the conversation. And so it was a conversation that started happening because there were a lot of uneducated voices on that specific topic. Now, as far as the ROI, you guys are on campus there every day. I've seen your facility from the Marriott Center, so I know how close you are to the basketball team and everything that they're doing. You would know better than me, but I do think, listen, I think it elevated BYU basketball. I mean, think about how many just marquee BYU games there were. There was the big Monday game against Arizona that I'm still mad I couldn't get out for. There was, you know, the Fog Allen game, which was obviously hyped as AJ versus Darren Peterson. And I think even as you got into March, even though the team success wasn't there, BYU was a national story. Should AJ have been the Big 12 Player of the Year? You know, is this a team that can make a run? You know, you saw them have success with a couple wins at the Big 12 tournament. So I still think the value is there. And I think, listen, it's a trickle-down effect with a Bruce Branch, with a Colin Chandler. And now it's just really about sustaining it at this point. As long as AJ DeBonsa is playing basketball, BYU will forever be attached to him. And certainly even after his playing career is done. And that's always going to be positive branding for BYU. But now it's about continuing the momentum and it not being this blip of, hey, there was that. Remember that one year when BYU started in the top 10 because they had the number one pick in the draft? I don't think that's what it's going to be. I believe that Kevin Young will again build a roster that can compete in the top part of the Big 12. But I think that's the big thing now is just maintaining that momentum that AJ brought to obviously the basketball program, but you know, from my understanding, the entire university as well.
I rarely want to look at one situation and be like, that's the new norm because it happened one time. But with Michigan, what did we learn relative to five new guys from the portal and how big they played? It felt like the Final Four was a referendum on bigs matter in 2026. Yes. Are they making a comeback? What did you learn from Michigan's championship run that might be applicable to BYU and other teams nationally?
Well, and I think the reverse can be true as well, Jerem, of I think everybody defaults to they had five transfers in the starting lineup, four came this year. Well, this is just the new world. Everybody needs to just reshuffle the deck every year. And, you know, being around that team for literally six straight days at the Final Four, that was one thing that I really kind of pressed on when I had the chance to talk to the staff is, hey, we all could see on tape how good Yoxo was and guys like that, but how did you do the character part of it? And they basically said, you know, it's homework like anyone else. Now, you know, I think in this world, we can all be realistic and we can all be fair and understand that, you know, most of these staffs probably have a pretty good idea of a lot of the guys that are going to enter the portal. So I don't think they were doing intel on Yoxel day one he entered the portal. And that was for dozens of programs across college basketball. The other thing, too, that kind of bugged me about the Michigan narrative specifically, and I'm not saying you said it, Jerem, but like the notion of, you know, all the transfers and they just bought a national champion. Like, I live in LA now. Adai Mora was not the Adai Mora that we saw at Michigan at UCLA. As a matter of fact, I kind of tweeted during the tournament, you know, you talk about a gross misuse of an incredible talent in Adai Mora, and then I had a bunch of UCLA fans saying, you don't know what you're, no, I watched the games. Mick Cronin did not know how to use Adai Mora. You don't go from playing 13 minutes a game, 6 points per game a year ago to what I believe was the most versatile chess piece in college basketball when you talk about the offensive and defensive impact that he had. Merez Johnson Jr. did not start at Illinois as a freshman. Elliot Cadeau, I think it's easy to forget, he was kind of forced out at North Carolina. There are interviews with him from the locker room after North Carolina lost in the tournament last year, where they asked him, like, you know, do you expect to be back at Carolina next year? And I'm paraphrasing, but he said something to the effect of, like, I want to be back. And the insinuation was, I don't know if I'm going to be welcomed back. And so I just bring all this up because, yes, I think you need a baseline level of money to compete at the highest level. Which BYU has, which virtually everybody in the Big 12 has. But I do still think it is about evaluation. It is about fit. And to anyone that just thinks that Michigan won because they just bought the best roster and brought in a bunch of transfers, no. They unlocked the best version of Adai Mara, of Merez Johnson Jr. That's still coaching. That's still fit. That's still scheme. And I think, you know, again, almost what I said about AJ a minute ago is I think that's a narrative that kind of got lost in the discussion by people that don't really understand college basketball.
Well, we'll welcome you back here, so don't worry about that.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. No Elliot Cadeau, North Carolina here. This is your Michigan or your UConn or your BYU. Aaron, we appreciate the time, man. Thanks for the insight.
No problem. Anytime you guys need me, it's great to be back and excited to see what the Cougs do over the next few weeks. Thank you guys for having me. Appreciate it.
Aaron Torres of Fox Sports Radio. If you miss any interviews or shows, Deep Blues, you can find them on BYUSN.com or download the free BYU TV app.
Up next, BYU baseball extends the win streak to how many games? Which Cougar football player ranks highest on a notable NFL draft board, and a former Batcat continues his hot start in the major leagues? This is BYU Sports Nation.
BYU Sports Nation is brought to you by the BYU Store, official outfitter of BYU fans everywhere.
Welcome back to Studio B. I am Spencer Linton. He is Jerem Jordan. Let's roll out today's headline, sponsored by BYU Continuing Education, inspiring lifelong learning for Cougar fans everywhere.
Kevin Young and men's hoops pick up the second commitment from the transfer portal yesterday, as first reported by Travis Branham of 24/7 Sports. So can't say the player's name, but 6'8 wing from Syracuse shot nearly 41% from three last season.
Seven different BYU football players featured on ESPN Jordan Reed's Top 500 Players NFL Draft Big Board. That is a mouthful of a qualifier.
But they are paying the bucks, Spence.
But they are. Jack Kelly at number 202. Chase Roberts at 300. Carson Ryan is your number 338 prospect. Isaiah Jada at 400 even. Will Farron, number 439.
Garrison Who's 457?
Grimes. Garrison Grimes.
Oh, cool.
And Maury Bamba at number 473. The NFL draft, unbelievably, starts next Thursday.
Let's go. MPSF semifinal day, too. Baseball extended its winning streak to 5 with a 4-0 win at Lamar. Some dude named Lamar last night. Pitchers Austin Park, Luke Sterner, Ethan Zuffel combined for the first shutout of the season. Nice. Up next, the Cougars take on number 23, Arizona State, the Cactus Utes, in Provo, beginning Thursday.
BYU softball hosting Utah Tech today at Miller Park. Fresh off a serious sweep of Houston in Big 12 play over the past weekend. BYU won the first meeting between these teams this season 10-1 in 5 innings in St. George. Hey, softball trying to win a 4th straight overall. You can watch that matchup 1:30 Eastern, 11:30 a.m. Mountain Time on ESPN+.
They're out there warming up right now, getting ready. Men's volleyball moved up to number 8 in the AVCA poll after splitting matches against number 4 USC. Tyler Herget, MPSF Offensive Player of the Week, after a season-high 55 assists Friday in the win. Then he had a career-high 63 assists in the 5-set loss Saturday. BYU 20-9 on the season. They close out the regular season against number 1 unanimously, UCLA, Thursday and Saturday in Pauley Pavilion.
Number 23 BYU men's golf concluding the first round of the Western Intercollegiate in California at 2-under par, good for a tie for 5th place, playing at beautiful Paso Tiempo. Kihei Akina leads the
Which
way
is Spanish
for BYU
the Nino.
At 3-under par, also good for tie for 5th place. Akina and BYU tee off in the second round today.
This show, Paso Tiempo. Daniel Schneeman singled and drove in 2 runs for the Guardians in a 9-3 win over Jason Shepard's Cardinals last night. Schneeman 5-for-11, 4 runs batted in over his last 3 games. Let's go.
Dude, he's balling. Mm-hmm. Let's go, Schnee. And BYU women's soccer, their schedule released for next season just a few minutes ago. Highlights include the season opener at UCLA on August 12th.
That's a good one.
As well as games with Wisconsin, USC, Minnesota, and Oklahoma. They have loaded the schedule yet again. For the full rundown, check it out right now, BYUCougars.com. When we come back, BYU offensive tackle Andrew Gentry discusses how the offensive line is gelling. Are you gelling? They're gelling. And his expectations for next season following spring ball. This is BYU Sports Nation.
BYU Sports Nation is brought to you by BYU Continuing Education, inspiring lifelong learning for Cougar fans everywhere.
I feel really good about the program and the leadership on the team.
It's real fun to play for an O-line with guys like Bruce, Kyle, Pocky, Sony, and AG back there. Just to play with guys like that, they just make it really easy, to be honest.
Design run, Buck Byers,
We hope for many a highlight just like that one coming up this fall with BYU football. Welcome back to BYU Sports Nation. Jerem Jordan alongside Spencer Linton. Andrew Gentry is the right tackle on that offensive line that blocks for Barron, LJ, and the boys. I recently spoke with the fifth-year senior at Lavelle Edwards Stadium. All right, Andrew, spring ball in the books. How was it, man?
It was great. I felt like the team really progressed super well. Super happy with the new transfers that came in. Felt like they just integrated super well into the team. Really just super excited. And I think with spring ball, the biggest thing is spring ball is setting you up for the summer. Summer sets you up for the season. And so I feel like in terms of setting us up for the summer, of understanding the playbook, and then getting ready for a really good summer training cycle, we're in about as good a spot as you can be of keeping guys healthy and ready to roll. So really thrilled with how it went and excited for the summer now.
Let's tackle some of what you just talked about. So some of those transfers, Pocky Finau playing some left tackle, what kind of impact could he have this year?
Yeah, I think he's going to have a massive impact. You know, he's a guy that we brought in to play right away. And seeing him in spring, he's ready to do it, right? And he played some great snaps at Washington, did a lot of great things over in the Big Ten, and he's going to do a lot of great things for us at that left tackle position. And so super excited to have him on the team. Great dude that fits in super well in the locker room, super athletic. And so we're really, really excited, really grateful to have him on the team.
Big Ten transfers on the O-line are good, question mark?
I think so, you know. I hope Cougar Nation thinks so too, but I'd like to think so.
Yeah. I agree. Junior Sia from Utah State and Zach Zamauchi from Stanford. I know they've been banged up a little bit, but what have you seen from them?
Yeah, both, again, great guys that fit in super well on our team. Both guys that have a good amount of eligibility left too, and so are going to be able to help us. You know, they're going to need to help us this year, right? You look at offensive lines, you need to have eight guys that are ready to play. And, you know, teams that I've been on, of, you know, you look at that national championship year at Michigan, we had seven, eight guys that started games that year. And so that's a big part of the game, is having guys that are healthy and ready to go. And those are both guys, again, that have played games at the Division I level, are ready to go, showed great things, fit in great with our team. And they're going to push guys too, right? And that's the biggest thing, is there's going to be a lot of competition in the room, and it's pushing everybody to be better. But fit in great in the room. It's going to be a great season on the offensive line at BYU. So we're pumped for that. But everybody looks good. Like you said, got to get some guys a little bit healthier in the summertime. But by the time the season rolls around, we're going to be full swing, ready to go.
Where do you feel like you got better?
I feel like the biggest thing where I got better this year was in pass protection, specifically being on the spot at the right time, staying firm on the spot. I felt like last year, where I was happy with a lot of things I did in pass protection from a statistical standpoint, there were times that I could just make it a lot more cleaner, put myself in easier positions. And so that was my goal this spring, was to really work on putting myself in easier positions to win. And felt like I did a lot of improvement in that area. Excited to continue working on that in the spring. You know, I was just mentioning in another interview right now, but when you come from the Big Ten, you come from the high school that I came through, it's all run mentality, right? You're playing in a three-point stance a lot of the time. It's run the ball, stop the run when you're in the Big Ten at Michigan. And so coming here to BYU was a little bit of a transition of learning to throw the ball. Obviously, we got great running backs with LJ. And, you know, I think we threw the ball a lot this spring, though, of kind of trying to elevate Bears' game and elevate our game as a whole. And so for me, that was really good to get a lot of those reps at pass protection, and really excited for what the season will bring now.
Where is Bear Bachmeier getting better?
I think the thing that Bear is doing the best at right now is he just commands the huddle now. Not to say that he didn't do that last year, because for a true freshman, he did a phenomenal job of that. But I think now, when you've started a full, you know, 14 games, you got a 14 games under your belt, you come in and there's just instant respect in the huddle. And so he takes that over. There's instant respect for him. But then also, too, he's mastered the offense now. He knows where guys are. It just seems like everything's happening a little bit quicker. And even that split second in college football makes a huge difference. And so seeing him, the way that he's able to make reads, throw the ball, get it out quick, just put it on the money every single time, too, it's been really fun to watch.
I know after fall camp, Aaron Roderick was saying he knows the whole playbook. Like, I can call anything. Yeah. But where in kind of mid-season did you feel he grew the most in terms of, like, in the huddle, at the line of scrimmage?
Yeah, you know, I think the biggest thing with Bear is it just felt like – you know, I couldn't name a particular time.
Snap count in a game. It was snap 73 of game 5.
Right. I wish I could name that. But I think it just happened progressively of where, you know, we trusted him automatically, right? But it became where he was that leader that we looked up to too, right? Where we knew that as soon as we stepped out on the field that we had him behind us, he had us in front of us, and we were just ready to roll. You know, I think that was the biggest thing. And honestly, you know, I think a big jump that took was in the Utah game, right? And I think that run that he had on that draw, getting into the end zone, I think something kind of happened in that moment where it was like, this guy, he's a real dude. I mean, he had proved it before in that, but I mean, you see a play like that and you're like, this dude is really something special. And I think from that moment on, it was kind of like, all right, like, we're ready to roll with this dude.
I'm smiling because didn't he hand you the ball to Spike and you handed it back?
Yeah, he did hand it to me to Spike. You know, that was in a moment where I was like, and it did run through my head, but I was like, you know, this is a great moment right now. Kalani's not going to be happy if I spike this ball and get 15-yard penalty, so I'm going to hand it right back to Bear, and we'll jog over to the sideline. Would have been a cool picture, though.
Yes. More on the O-line. You described some of the keys for you. For the average person who has no idea about offensive line stuff, you break the huddle. What are you thinking about? What are you looking at?
Yeah, I mean, the first thing is assignment, right? So every play, you have a base assignment, right, of what you're going to do, right? And so they're going to call a run play to the right. So you know, okay, it's going to the right. This is what we have to do, basics. So that's kind of the first thing. All right, this is my base assignment. Then after that, the next thing I look at is the defense, right? What's the defensive structure? How many guys do we have in the box, right? So if you're talking to nobody that has any idea of football, right, how many defensive linemen are there? How many linebackers are there? And where are they on the field? Then after that, when I have that base knowledge, I'm going to look at the safeties, see if there's any pressure coming, try to look at my keys that I've scouted out that week. Then if I know where pressure's coming from, it helps me play a little bit faster, right? I can have that one-step advantage of if I know a pressure's coming to my side, knowing that I might have to bypass the guy in front of me and block somebody else. And I think that's also where my game has taken a leap this year as well, is really starting to look at the whole picture of the defense, looking at it holistically, because when I can look at it from that view, then it really helps you become a split second quicker. And in the game of college football, to be a half second quicker just because of mental preparation equals a big difference. And so for me, that's kind of what my thought process is. You know, base assignment, defense is base, and then from there, the little nuances of pressure and whatnot.
Thanks for the time and the insight. I appreciate it.
Of course. Always a pleasure, Jerem.
Always good to learn from Andrew Gentry.
He's the best.
If you want more interviews from spring ball, including interviews with Bear Bachmeier, LJ Martin, and more, subscribe to the BYU Sports Nation YouTube channel to watch on demand.
Up next, loaded question. Who have been BYU basketball's most impactful transfers in the transfer portal era specifically? We'll count down our top five next on BYUSN.
BYU Sports Nation is brought to you by the BYU Store. Official outfitter of BYU fans everywhere. BYU Sports Nation is brought to you by PAX, healthcare careers built for victory.
Welcome back to BYU Sports Nation. We are live in Studio B, and it is time to count down on Top 5 Tuesday. The top five BYU basketball transfers in the transfer portal era, which means 2018 to now.
Number five was hotly contested. We're going to go with Kaba Keita.
Let's go, Kaba.
Kaba Keita, starting center on a Sweet 16 team 2 years ago, transferred from that school up north with Chris Burgess. 7 points, seven boards in his 2 years here. 11 points, seven boards 2 years ago in that Sweet 16.
Listen, he's delivered some of the most iconic dunks in BYU basketball history and probably the loudest blocked shot in the history of BYU basketball.
He has a fifth year of eligibility for men's volleyball, just saying.
Number four, Jackson Robinson, one of those players that took the ascension at BYU when he got, or took a minute, but had a nice rise, helped BYU to a fifth place finish in year one of the Big 12 and a sixth seed in the NCAA tournament.
Number three, Matt Harms, transferred to BYU from Purdue. 7'3" center, 11 rebounds, 11 points, 5 rebounds, 2 blocks. He was the West Coast Conference Defensive Player of the Year and helped BYU to a 6th seed in the NCAA tournament in that weird 2021 season.
At number 2, Rob Wright III, transferred to BYU from Baylor, of course, before last season, averaged just over 18 points, 4.6 assists per game this past season, third team All-Big 12, helped BYU to another 6th seed in the NCAA tournament. Currently in the portal.
Hopefully it comes back. Number one, Alex Barcelo, transferred to BYU after 2 years at Arizona. 14 points a game in 3 seasons, 45% from 3 in his final 2. Honorable mention All-American in 2021. 2-time first-team All-West Coast Conference.
Telling you, like, a lot of good names. Spencer Johnson, Rudy Williams, Mawit Magg, Gideon George, Brandon Avery, Dawson Baker, T'John Lucas, big-time transfers.
Yep, there have been some good ones.
All right, our elite voice of the day, presented by PAX Healthcare Careers Built for Victory, answers this question with 8 players currently in the portal. Do you believe BYU basketball will have a net gain when all is said and done after the portal madness? At that Trotter, Jackson Trotter says yes. BYU only returns 4% of the scoring, but 51.8% of the lost scoring came from AJ and Richie. BYU hasn't lost enough serious production to the portal for it to be a net negative.
And let's just see in the next couple months who BYU gets first.
So far, so good.
I think by the end of the week, we'll have more good news. Let's go.
Today's Rise and Shoutout presented by Mountain America, official credit union of BYU Athletics.
Baseball, 5 straight wins for the first time since 2022. Keep it going, ASU, Thursday.
Let's go. Our thanks to today's guests, Aaron Torres and Andrew Gentry.
Sorry to Dennis Pitta, we ran out of time.
or Jeremon Spencer. Baseball on the Mind, shout out to Maverick Buffo.
Nice, good pull.
Let's go softball today on ESPN+. We'll see you tomorrow back here in Studio B. Go Cougs.